go forward to appear in a what to Russians might seem like Russian leadership might seem like a threatening posture, and to you know, the people say there's a saying that NATO exists to deal with the instability that its own existence creates.
Yeah, I'm wondering if Timothy Snyder can respond to this issue of the NATO expansion. But also, you know, I happen to be unfortunately old enough to remember the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, when President Kennedy was ready to go to war, if necessary, with the Soviet Union over the fact that the Soviet Union was putting missiles in an independent country, Cuba, but the United States felt threatened by the ability of the Soviet Union to enter its sphere of influence. I'm wondering if there's you see any parallels with the mentality of Putin right now.
So let me roll back to the history, and I'll end with Cuba. So there, when Germany was unified, the Americans and the Soviets did make an arrangement about West Germany and East Germany. That arrangement, however, did not foresee and had nothing to do with the subsequent collapse of the Soviet Union after 19. We're talking about something that happened in 1990. In 1991, to everyone's surprise, the Soviet Union no longer existed. And after that point, it's very important to remember that the world isn't just about Washington and Moscow. It's also about other sovereign states and other peoples who can express their desires and have their own foreign policies. So when we speak of NATO enlargement, I mean, that's a bit of a misnomer. NATO was not there to enlarge. There wasn't much willingness on the part of Western Europe or the US to enlarge. It was the East Europeans themselves who pushed the process forward. I mean, we can decide that they didn't understand their own national interests, but that's how the process unfolded. It came from the East Europeans. And there was never an understanding between the United States and Russia after 1991 that this wasn't going to happen. It's true that the Russians objected, but it's also true that their understanding of NATO has changed drastically after NATO expansion halted and with the re-election of Mr. Putin. In the 1990s and 2000s, Russia and NATO cooperated, not least in Afghanistan, where the Russians tended to insist that the Americans and NATO had to take a harder line than they were taking. Mr. Putin himself referred to NATO well into the 21st century as a defensive alliance. He himself has changed drastically the way that he speaks about NATO. He uses it essentially as a way to try to rally the Russian population. Now, I would distinguish between what Mr. Putin says about this war and what the Russians think. It's very hard to find, at least as far as I can read the data, a Russian opinion that somehow Russia was threatened by Ukraine in 2022. I'm not seeing that. But in an important and fundamental way, this entire discussion is moot, because now we know, given the way that the Russians are prosecuting this war, that never had anything to do with the ostensible motivations that they cited in late 2021. Given the way that they're prosecuting this war, we know that it's about the destruction of the Ukrainian state, given what they say and what they're doing. So I think it's important to also give the Russians agency, to give Mr. Putin agency, to understand that he might have motives which go beyond things that we do or go beyond the things he says that he thinks we'll understand. Now, on Cuba, Cuba encourages me in an odd way, because in Cuba, the Americans made a deal. We pulled our missiles out of Turkey. That was the deal. I think there are arrangements that can be made to stop this war. I think there are compromises that can be found.
We want to thank you both for being with us. Clearly, a discussion that we need to continue at a future date. Timothy Snyder, Yale professor of history, author of many books, including The Road to Unfreedom, Russia, Europe, America, and On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century. And thank you to Andrew Coburn, Washington editor of Harper's Magazine, his new book, The Spoils of War, Power, Profit, and the American War Machine. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
Buffalo Tapes on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3. Listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3. I'm Claude Glass. This is yet another episode of Nucleotapes, a show where we look at an artist's DNA. And on today's episode, we are looking at one of my favorite modern musicians, Kate Laban. Kate Laban was born in Wales, has so far released 5 albums, and her breakthrough kind of came in 2013 with Mug Museum. We just heard a track from that called Duke. She has continued to build on that sort of sound on the next 2 subsequent records, 2016's Crab Day and 2019's Reward. Intelligently constructed, sort of angular psych pop, she really effortlessly combines so many of my favorite sorts of genres and sounds. I firmly believe that her last release, 2019's Reward, is one of the best albums of the 2010s. Seems like lately she's kind of on track to release an album every 3 years, which means, hey, one should be coming pretty soon, next year. Although I have read in interviews and stuff that, especially around the 2016 record, started to kind of view music as a chore, as it increasingly became a part of her job. you started to feel kind of distant from the whole process. There was a lot of expectation. It just started to feel less fun. So she started to get into furniture building, actually, around the time that she was starting to record 2019's Reward. And she started to record that record just kind of almost treating music like a hobby. She'd come home and work on things and just bits and pieces. Not in this hugely focused, just extended marathon sessions of songwriting and really intense crafting. Just trying to get the basic parts of the songs and the structures out of the way in a way that felt really organic and fun. And I think that really comes through on that record. I'm sure at some point she also did have to put her head down and really work on those tracks, because they can get pretty out there at times. Some pretty diverse instrumentation and some interesting, unexpected arrangements. Just one of my favorite parts of that record. It keeps you on your toes and still manages to be really consistent. Nothing feels like it's totally coming out of left field, because everything on that record is it kind of feels like it's coming out of left field. It's consistent in its ability to just keep throwing new things at you, new sounds, new structures for songs. She plays around with repetition, I think, in a really successful way. Nothing ever starts to feel very tired. Everything is very fresh, but yeah, you get the sense that you are really thoroughly exploring a certain sonic idea listening to one of her songs. In these next three sets, we're going to dig into some of the influences that she draws upon. It's a lot of fairly retro psychedelic sounds, although a pretty diverse range of those things, I would say. So we're going to start off with maybe the most obvious comparison, which you can say that about a ton of modern bands, but she frequently gets compared to Nico because of that sort of mildly detached vocal delivery with a slight accent. But I think in both Nico's case and Kate LeBond's case, even though they're not overselling it or charging every word with really overt emotion, sometimes saying certain lyrics with a lack of emotion it can be kind of emotional. I mean, I think of Nico's performance of These Days to be probably the best example of that. The lyrics sound dejected, and Nico's delivery of them sounds equally dejected and ends up coming across in a really emotional way. It's the most nuanced way to deliver those lyrics in a way. So, to hear that comparison really come through, we're going to hear a track from the 1967 Velvet Underground and Nico record. We're going to check out one of the songs that Nico sings lead on, I'll Be Your Mirror. The chances of somebody being totally unfamiliar with that record, I think, in 2021 are pretty slim, but hey, whatever. Still worth checking out a song from it. It's a classic. After that, we're going to move on to some kind of psychedelic folk that came out of the Canterbury scene. Canterbury scene is probably most famously and commonly associated with bands like The Soft Machine. And we're going to check out solo records from two of the members of that band. First, we're going to take a look at a Robert Wyatt solo record called Sleep, which is just sleep with an H after the S. I love the cover for that record, and yeah, it just has this certain mysticism. I said something earlier about Kate LeBond's songs feeling very intelligently constructed, and I think Robert Wyatt's songs feel very similarly. He really borrows from that kind of folk palette, but brings almost a sort of prog energy to constructing the songs, or a jazz sensibility, which I think is something that the Soft Machine records do really well. Yeah, it's a really cool record. Makes me want to dig into more of his records. But we're going to be checking out the third track from that, Marianne. Then we're going to listen to a track from a solo Kevin Ayers record, Joy of a Toy, probably his most famous. We're going to check out a wonderfully repetitive and catchy track from that called Religious Experience, a wonderful ode to the cathartic feeling that comes with singing repetitive song lyrics to yourself. At least that's how it comes across to me. Then I think Kate LeBond's music takes a lot of those kind of folksy or psychedelic elements and combines them with a little bit of a no wave or kind of angular energy. So to get a little bit of that DNA, we're going to look at a really early Devo track from Hardcore Devo called Golden Energy. I believe most of the demos on this record were recorded before the release of their first record. Yeah, four-track demos recorded in the mid-70s. So this is definitely some of the earliest Devo tracks you can access, and it's definitely them at their strangest. But before we get there, just in case Kate LeBond might be a little bit unfamiliar to you, we're going to hear another one of her songs. We're going to start this set off with Here It Comes Again from Reward. All right, I'll see you back here in a few. That's our first set.
Dog. won't be afraid. When you think the night has in your mind that inside you're twisted and unkind, let me stand to show that you are blind. Please put down your hands, 'cause I see you. I'll be your mirror. I'll be your mirror. I'll be your mirror. I'll be your mirror.
Over an ocean away, like salmon turning back for night.
Thanks for tuning in to Nucleotapes on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3. On this show, we unpack the musical DNA of a certain artist, and on this week's episode, we are looking at the modern experimental pop musician Kate LeBon, who sort of synthesizes an angular, no-wave-ish outsider energy with the palette of a lot of 60s and 70s psychedelic pop and folk music. We just heard a set that started to unpack some of those influences, and we're going to continue to on the next set. We're going to dig into some more 60s folk, focusing more on some sort of introverted, undiscovered records, or at least undiscovered at the time of their release. They've attracted quite a following now. So in this next set, we're going to hear songs by artists like Linda Perhax, Nick Drake, and Sybil Bayer. I think you can see their influence come through just in terms of the songwriting. The songwriters that take a sort of unexpected way into examining a really personal concept, I think, is something that Kate LeBon's lyrics do very well, as well as the guitar. I think there are definitely some similarities between the guitar playing of somebody like Nick Drake and Kate LeBon's guitar playing, which sort of takes that very pattern-heavy, repetitive feeling and mashes it up with the sensibility of the Raincoats or something like that. So we're going to start things off on this next set with a track from a 1970 record by Linda Perhax called Parallelograms. The opening track from that, Chimicum Rain. Linda Perhax is a Californian musician who recorded this album, Parallelograms, in the late 60s, who kind of just was writing songs for herself, was a very personal songwriter. I don't think she had aspirations of becoming an influential musician or a famous musician or anything like that. But, she was working as a dental hygienist and met a record executive in the office, recorded this album, and it was kind of undiscovered for a long time until the freak folk movement of the early 2000s dug it up unexpectedly. Similar to Sybil Bayer, who we'll hear later in the set, and Vashti Bunyan, I think are the three artists that benefited from that rediscovery probably the most. I think knowing that information going into this record makes it seem so extraordinary. It's hard to imagine somebody that's seemingly just writing songs as a hobby or writing songs in such an isolated way. Someone that's not connected to the industry. I guess somebody that doesn't have just a ton of experience writing a song like this, it's kind of hard to imagine. I think because it does seem so sure of itself and so experienced. I don't know. I just, in terms of the arrangement, I think it's a really cool song. Moving on from there, a songwriter that definitely did not get very much attention while he was alive, which sort of led to his early, unexpected passing, Nick Drake. Going to be checking out a song from his 1969 record, Five Leaves Left. All three of the albums he released while he was alive are great, including the very straightforward and minimalist Pink Moon, which is probably his most popular record now. Love that album. But I think it's definitely worth checking out his other stuff. So we'll be listening to track 6 from that first record, Cello Song. Sort of famous now for confidently experimenting with alternative tunings and interesting picking patterns. Has a really interesting idiosyncratic approach to playing the guitar. You can tell that a lot of care and a lot of passion went into his songs. And I think when they didn't really attract much interest at the time of their release, it was kind of disappointing for him, kind of heartbreaking. He kind of struggled to come to terms with that. Moving on from there, another one of those rediscoveries of the freak folk movement, Sybil Bayer. She is a German singer-songwriter. This collection of songs, titled Color Green, I don't think ever had a release in the 70s when it was recorded. She just recorded these tracks in her house on her own time on some fairly inexpensive equipment. They eventually saw a wider release in 2006, but yeah, they've managed to find quite a following in the sort of indie music scene for, yeah, once again, just how unexpectedly excellent and confident these songs come across. We're going to be hearing the opening track from that collection titled Tonight, which paints such a vivid picture. And that'll do it for our set on Kate LeBon's sort of folk influences that she incorporates into her sound. Before we get there, one more track from Kate LeBon from that 2019 record Reward that I was raving about earlier. Here's the second track, Daylight Matters.
Every day since I came, and the lichen covers rocks, and the green finds everything. Chimicum rain, and the rain down around you. Chimicum. I'm spacing out. I'm seeing stars. between leaves. I've seen dance, and I'm seeing silences that are here. Place in the cloud.
tonight. When I came home from work, hurt tonight. When I came home from work, there he, unforeseen, sat in my kitchen, buttering himself for bread, and the cat was on his knee and smiled at me. Tonight, when I came home from work, tonight, when I came home from work, there he, unforeseen, passed the guitar and said, I battered my car right now, won't you please give me your tune? We had change of the moon, we had change of the moon. Tonight, when I came home from work, tonight, when I came home from work, tonight, when I came home from work, there he, unforeseen, changed in an easy chair and said, what's that sorrow you bear? And I could tell him he understood. He gently took my arm, he listened to my tears till dawn. I dedicate this song to you. Tonight we had change of the moon, we had change of the moon. Tonight when I came home from work, tonight when I came home from work, tonight, tonight, tonight.
Hey, you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3. I'm Claude Glass. This is my show, Nuclear Tapes. On today's episode, we are looking at one of my favorite modern musicians, Kate Laban, a psychedelic folk musician coming from Wales. In the past two sets, we looked at a few of her influences. We checked out tunes from Robert Wyatt, Devo, Nick Drake, Cybill Bayer. If you want to see anything on that set list, it's always posted on reptiliansnackrecords.com/nucleotapes. And on the Reptilian Snack Records Instagram page, you can stay updated with what's going on over there. On this next set, I thought it'd be a good idea to dig into some of Kate Laban's contemporaries. Like I said, Kate Laban is from Wales, and she got her start touring with one of the members of the famous Welsh band Super Furry Animals. She was on tour with Gruff Rees. So it seems like she got her start and just kind of grew up in a surprisingly active psychedelic folk community, making some interesting, innovative stuff. A surprisingly deep list of quality psych records coming out of Wales in the early 2000s. Probably most notably from bands like Super Furry Animals and Gorky's Zygotic Mincy. But I think it's fair to say that that scene and participating in that scene from really early on in her career definitely had some kind of impact. Being able to see that sort of experimentation and that sort of just overall strangeness could still have some crossover pop appeal. Also playing with other musicians that were confidently writing songs in the Welsh language, which Kate Laban did probably more often in her early career. I don't think there's any tracks on her last record that deviate from English. But yeah, her first EP actually was entirely in the Welsh language. It's a title that I will not attempt to pronounce. We're going to look at a few of those friends coming out of Wales in this next set. We're going to start off with a track from Gruff Rees, who's actually the member of Super Furry Animals that Kate Laban first toured with. I thought it'd be cool to put one of his tracks on the playlist today, because he just released an album in 2021, I think this month. Still incredibly new. It's called Seeking New Gods. Definitely an entertaining listen. Going to be checking out a song from that called Hiking and Lightning, which, hearing it after the release of the record, I was kind of surprised that it wasn't a single. It's got a wonderfully poppy energy. There's also something sort of playfully dangerous about the lyrics, especially the hook, that obviously deals with hiking and lightning. Not the best idea. After that, another contemporary Welsh psych musician, Gwenno. We're going to be hearing a track from Gwenno's 2018 record, Lake Hove. We'll be checking out the fifth track from that. That is a wonderful release. It really comes out of the gate swinging with those first two tracks. Probably the most poppy moments across the board on that thing. Yeah, music that is poppy but manages to still be delightfully strange. Has also collaborated with Gruff Rees and members of Super Furry Animals, much like Kate LeBond. I'd be surprised if the two didn't know each other or hadn't met at some point, especially because they seem to be drawing from a similar set of influences, coming from the same country of origin. Yeah, they have to have run into each other at some point, I would imagine. After that, we're going to be looking at one of Kate LeBond's label mates. Kate LeBond, on her most recent record, Reward, signed to Mexican Summer, one of my favorite record labels right now. I think they're operating out of Brooklyn. So yeah, Reward is Kate LeBond's first full-length record with Mexican Summer, though she did release a collaborative project with Bradford Cox of Deer Hunter for the Marfa Myth series that Mexican Summer does. So there's some interesting stuff on that as well. Couldn't fit those songs into today's set list, but maybe sometime in the future. But yeah, we're going to be looking at another artist signed to Mexican Summer that draws from a similar set of introverted 60s folk influences. Jessica Pratt. We'll be checking out a track from her most recent record, 2019's Quiet Signs. We're going to be listening to one of her most popular tracks, kind of across the board, called This Time Around. I remember reading somewhere online somebody comparing that track to a Caetano Veloso song. We looked at Caetano Veloso, I think, 2 weeks ago. And there's something about that that does feel right to me. It is a very tasteful acoustic number. Some wonderful chords and melodies on that thing. Then we're going to end this set off with a track from Drinks, which is the collaborative project between Kate LeBond and Tim Presley. Tim Presley, probably most famously of White Fence, has had a long career up to this point, releasing very out there psychedelic projects. Kate LeBond attributes a large part of her rediscovery of what can be fun about music, like I talked about in the beginning of the show. Getting back into music just for the cathartic hobby aspect of it. Yeah, she attributes that a lot of that process to working on this project with Tim Presley and, just listening to Tim Presley's music in general, that he seems to have such a good time with it. There's a certain fun, entertaining energy that comes through on a lot of his releases. Even though they are pretty out there, it seems like they're out there just because he's entertained by that. It's just really cool to hear the two of them working together on such a strangely catchy project. We're going to be checking out the very angular, no-wavy track Hermits on Holiday from the first record they released together, first of two. But before we get there, from Kate LeBond's second record, we're going to be checking out a track called Fold the Cloth.
Thank you. belly in your chest and see how close we are. Seven shades of brown, trip from cabalistas and now you know you need to come around. Put your belly to the crest and see how close we are.
Hiking in lightning. Swimming in a sea.
hiking in lightning. Hiking in lightning.
Speck Brothers Pizza joins you in supporting WRCT Pittsburgh. Speck Brothers Pizza offers pizza, hoagies, and wings while specializing in vegan and vegetarian alternatives. Speck Brothers Pizza uses no refined sugars in its sauce and unbleached flour in its dough. Speck Brothers is committed to safety during the ongoing pandemic by providing online ordering and payment, as well as contact-free pickup. You can learn more about online ordering on speckbros.com, and you'll receive a text message when your food is ready to pick up. For more information, call 412-362-SPAK or visit their website at spackbrothers.com. That's 412-362-7725 or spakbrothers.com. If you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. If you're looking for another show to check out on WRCT, consider tuning into Dr. Osi's Tembo Sound Show. The Tembo Sound Show is a uniquely crafted radio show mixed and presented live by the scholar-practitioner Dr. Oscar Ridoli on WRCT Pittsburgh on Saturday from 8 to 10 p.m. For playlists of past...
Thor, the Metal Avenger. You are listening to the music of the gods with Sean Watson on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. Behold the hammer!